Welcome to Lessons in Leadership, Steve Adubato with my colleague, Mary Gamba. Mary, we kick off the program with a leader in the field of banking, Fred Castrovinci, New Jersey Regional President, Valley Bank Commercial Banking. Good to see you, Fred.
Hey, Steve. Great to be with you today. Mary, great to see you.
Fred, do you admit that you were a former student of mine when I was teaching leadership at the bank? Do you admit this publicly?
I do, and I appreciate it.
Okay, I haven't screwed you up too much, right?
No, and I want to thank Mary for all that she's done to help my career in leadership development. Mary, you really...
She have to do it. She got nothing.
I had everything to do with it. And thank you, Fred, for acknowledging my involvement in your development. I greatly appreciate it.
Mary was there.
I was there.
Mary's always there. Hey, Fred, listen, describe your role at Valley. Let me disclose, Valley, a longtime underwriter of our programming. Go ahead, Fred.
As New Jersey Regional President over commercial banking, I run various teams throughout the state of New Jersey to support businesses of revenues anywhere from three to hundreds of millions of dollars to grow, provide access to capital, resources, expertise, and really, you know, connect them to all resources that Valley has available to them.
Mary.
Speaking of teams, Fred, I want to jump right in. You are very much into wellness. I know that you are a former wrestler. I believe you're a current wrestling coach, if I remember correctly.
Mary, not WWE wrestling.
I didn't say WWE
no,
wrestling.
I want to clarify.
Brother.
Collegiate, high school wrestling.
High school, wrestling. Collegiate wrestling. I did not preface it with WWE, although my family, as you know, Steve, is a huge WWE fan. So I will make the distinction.
I still think it's real, but go ahead.
It's not. I thought the storylines were real. And talk a little bit, Fred, about that. Your passion for wellness, where that comes from, also the YMCA. I know there's a link there as well. So just talk a little bit. You were talking about teams, so just wanted to jump right into that topic of wellness.
Absolutely. I think as a leader, right, in order for us to deliver the best of ourselves, to give energy to our people, you have to be centered and have your own disciplines. And it could be various things for yourself. It could be working out. It could be meditation, just, you know, quiet time for yourself. I've always had personal wellness, athletics as part of my upbringing. And coaching has been a passion of mine, helping people, developing others. So naturally, as my kids were younger in junior wrestling programs, I spent a lot of time coaching and helping them, even though they didn't always listen to me. It was always a pleasure to be part of that program.
But, you know, in all seriousness, the other part of this equation, other than wellness, which is a big theme in our leadership work, and also, let me also share that for the last 5-6 years, Mary, we've been leading the Valley Leadership Academy, more than that, actually. And Fred was one of the original folks in that academy, and we work with a great team over there now, Sabine Salvatore and all the other folks who have been great with that. But I want to be clear. The whole question of leadership development is tied very much, in my view, and I know in yours as well, Fred, to relationship building. It's a long-winded way of saying you're a relationship person. You work on relationships all the time. I have argued, and I won't get on my soapbox, that they're not as organic as people think. It's nice when that happens, but you have to be strategic and intentional in building relationships and consistent and giving, you say.
Relationships take a long time. Trust takes a long time, and I think it really starts with trust, Steve. And how do you establish trust? You establish trust by showing up, number one, and that's more so in person, being consistent, following through on the things that you're saying you're going to do, and really listening and understanding the needs, mutual, motives and needs on both parties, and trying to align all of that where it makes sense, and understanding it may not all make sense on day one, and relationships evolve in different ways and phases over periods of time.
If someone says, and I know Mary and I talk about this all the time, because we spend a lot of our time on business development, raising money for our not-for-profit production company, bringing in, keeping clients on our stand and deliver side. People say, I need to make a deal. And my response is, of course, we know you need to make a deal. You got to pay the bills. But transactional leadership versus relationship leadership, what's the difference, Fred?
It's a big difference, and that's why being in it for the long run and not acting on today is where the people truly appreciate and understand when value is being created. Sometimes that takes a long time. We find that there is very little value in a transactional relationship, and those come and go with the wind. We are there to create value for the long term, and even if that's okay, if it's no for today and not yet, and we're willing to wait and be patient because we're not going anywhere.
Hey, Mary, how do you like that? No for today. Just no for today, right? Go ahead, jump back in, Mary.
I'm just laughing. My younger son Fred is an actor, and for years we always said it's not a no, it's just a not yet, or it's not a no. They're just looking for something different. So it's funny how you can frame that in your mind, and it is so true. Fred, I want to pivot. There's really no great pivot to the topic of AI innovation. If there's one thing that time has taught us, is that change is the only constant. Not only do we need to adapt to internal, external factors and change around us, but sometimes we have to be proactive in innovating and working together with the team at Valley. I know that that is forefront on the mind of how are we continually evolving, innovating, and growing. Talk a little bit about innovation and what that looks like at Valley.
So I'd like to start that by saying Valley, being the largest bank headquartered in New Jersey, largest regional bank now, we've tripled in size over the last 7 years under Ira Robbins' leadership. With that explosive growth comes a lot of change, a lot of opportunity for our associates, potential disruption in places, a lot of strain on infrastructure. Our folks here at the bank are used to that constant change, that constant drive to be better, to deliver better solutions, to have more comprehensive solutions for our customers. We are constantly in that mode of growing, looking to the next thing, being better all the time. And with that, we are looking at AI as well today. We have governance committees around that. I think governance, and especially in banking, which is highly regulated, governance is critical when it comes to AI. So we have already been integrating AI in various shapes and forms. It could be Microsoft Copilot within our internal systems. It could be for fraud detection systems on the AML and fraud side. And I think what I'm excited.
AML, Fred,
Yes.
we always try to translate acronyms. AML stands for.
Anti-money laundering and fraud. Thank you, Steve.
Go ahead.
What I'm most excited for in the near term on the AI front for banking, as I'm front facing and my teams are front facing with customers, solutions that we can partner with fintech companies that can bolt within and onto our systems, that can look at activities of customers and identify needs very quickly, much more efficiently than us doing it in a manual way when we've got thousands and thousands of customers and transactions every single day. So understanding needs quickly, and then also maybe what's the next best product or service that's suited for a customer in a certain industry at a certain revenue size of their business and in a certain geography. So I'm really excited to that we're in process the process of talking to vendors and companies that work on those solutions.
Before I let you go, you mentioned Ira, who's the CEO of the bank. And also, it's interesting that Valley changed the name from Human Resources to People Resources. And Yvonne at the bank has been great in that regard. Her portfolio is much bigger than that. But tell folks why it's called People Resources and not Human Resources.
It's all about people. We are leading and interacting. We are emotional beings. We all have different motivational factors, different drivers, and you have to understand people and create a culture of trust for your people before you can execute on any strategy. I think that's been a big part of our success.
Yeah, AI will not replace the emotional side of human beings. Fred Castrovinci and the great team at Valley Bank. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it, Fred.
My pleasure, Steve.
You got it. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Vecino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, PragerMedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
How long you been waiting?
About a half hour.
Brutal. This keeps up, I'm gonna miss my pickleball game.
I've been waiting 8 years for a kidney. What can you do?
Over 100,000 people in the U.S. are waiting for a life-saving transplant. But you can do your part in an instant. Register as an organ donor today at njsn.org.
We're now joined by Enrique Lavin, who is editor of Star Ledger Online. Enrique, good to see you.
Good to see you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's get down to it. Every morning for years, I was one of the last people to open up my front door, walk out, grab my Star Ledger, get my coffee, and I was ready for the day. What is the biggest difference between what thousands and thousands of us did for so many years? Star Ledger is such a big part of our life, and the Star Ledger Online, please.
Sure. Well, you nailed it on the head. It's habits. We've changed your habits on how to read the newspaper. And it's a conversation I have frequently with subscribers like yourself about that habit. It's something that people really were attached to, that ritual in the morning with coffee and paging through the paper, sharing it with a spouse or a partner in the house, clipping recipes out or a comic or putting it on the fridge. We understand all that is different. And you can still clip out things from the online newspaper, but it's not the same, of course. And so part of what we've been doing for the last year through my work as the editor is holding our subscribers' hands to enter the digital age. It's much like what I did 12 years ago with the Star Ledger staff. I was part of the team that helped train our entire staff to be digital first reporters and editors. And it's really no different. It's helping readers understand that you're going to get a little bit better experience, news experience, digitally than what you had with the paper.
Enrique, let me follow up on this. This is part of our series on media leadership.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, in bringing people, professionals, into the field of media in the world you're living in, versus the world so many of us came into media journalism the way we did. You're talking about digital skills and tools. Are the basic skills and tools of being a journalist different and you've added to them on the digital side, or is the entire profession totally different?
That's a fantastic question. I get it all the time. And is it totally different? It's a lot different. I would say 25% of it is what we remember as newspaper journalists,
right,
as legacy media journalists, and that we still have the same principles. We're going to go get the heartbreaking news. We're going to ask the tough questions. We're going to stay ethical. We're going to maintain those high standards. The difference is the distribution, right? Is where we had TV, radio, and newspapers. Now you have a galaxy of places where our content is going. And that's where the change is. That's where the drastic change is. And in terms of finding the journalists who can do that work, yes, we actually go looking for experts, say, in social media, in newsletter reporting and distribution, in podcasting. All these are skills that are now almost required in the newsroom.
Enrique, go back. Connect podcasting to Star Ledger Online.
Sure.
If I get my, again, as a subscriber to the online version as well, I see it there. I take my phone, I blow it up a little bit, and I go, oh, now I can read this. I put my glasses on, I can read that article. Where the heck does podcasting come into Star Ledger Online?
Right. Well, see, Steve, that's been my job, is really to help you understand that with your Starletter subscription, you also have a subscription to NJ.com, and you are missing out.
Connect NJ.com to Starletter Online. Go ahead.
So I mentioned that 12 years ago, I trained the Starletter staff to become digital first. Around that same time, NJ Advanced Media, the newsroom,
The parent company.
that formed. It was basically a marriage between NJ.com and the Starletter, where NJ.com was already d a digital first news operation, news and information entertainment operation, and the Starledger was print and ink and paper. And so today, the NJ Advanced Media Newsroom for the last decade, 12 years, has been providing content to both, to NJ.com and to the Starledger. The Starledger readers still, like yourself, enjoyed reading the newspaper and having it all in one place. The difference with NJ.com is, whereas the Starledger focused on five core counties, Ledgerlands is what we've traditionally called it, NJ.com has to cover the entire state. So we are all over the state now, as opposed to just concentrating on those five, six counties with bureaus, with covering local, really things on the hyper-local level that we are striving to return today after 12 years. But covering the entire state is a different prospect, and what it comes down to is finding that audience. And we were trying to do that before the, say, the industry collapse or the industry reinvention. Is where is that new audience? And we thought it was a we got to find that young audience where they are. We were building a website to for college students. All that thinking was going ahead until this thing came around. Facebook, Google, Twitter, that came around, and that changed everything.
Yeah. And we can, I'm curious about this media economics. So for our production company, our media production company, we spend a significant amount of our time bringing in the dollars, bringing in sponsors, underwriters, and keeping a very lean operation, as you do as well. But for some of us on this side of the equation, we're involved in both sides of the business of the business and the journalism and the content of the business. And historically, as you well know, there was always this discussion of separation of church and state, metaphorically speaking. And in media, that meant the market, the business people, the sponsorship people, the money people, they're over there. The journalists are over there. In our world, we're both. What are you?
Correct. I am part of the publisher-minded set of journalists, and it was something that was instilled in us during the revolution of our news media industry, that we should be thinking as publishers. We lost around
As
200.
business people, hold on one second. When Enrique says publishers, I think he means business people.
Correct. The
Go
people
ahead.
who think about how our journalism can be monetized, how it can bring in revenue to pay for the
Right.
journalism that we do. And so back then, we you're right, it was a clear separation of church and state. We called it the same thing. We don't talk to the business side. Some of us editors did. I was in features, so I would create products that they could sell, a parenting publication, go find some ads. Let's do something in Ticket where we cover the towns, and maybe the towns can advertise in that special section. So I was already thinking in those terms back then. But moving over to the digital first stage of things, we have metrics. So we know what our customers, our readers are reading. We and if something hits, if there's something that readers like, because we know there's a high number of say clicks on that particular piece of that story, then we know we should probably do a follow-up or something more because there's interest in that. Other pieces that flop, we think, well, maybe they don't want that, and we should let's not invest our time in doing those things. The other aspect, Steve, is I was for 5 years a publisher and editor of NJ Cannabis Insider, and that was a product that the newsroom created, not under the business side, but the newsroom decided that we should create a business side to bring in, say, the smaller dollars that perhaps the business side wouldn't consider. And in that way, there was a small team on the editorial side where we think in those terms. How can we monetize the content that we have to support the journalism that we're doing?
This is complex stuff. And in the spirit of, the separation between church and state, editorial and business, the line is there, but it's not the same. And so in that spirit, let me disclose that NJ.com is a media partner of ours. We distribute some of our content on NJ.com. We promote and market our content on NJ.com. We're partners. So in my view, if you disclose and people know, and people can decide for themselves about the content, whether it's independent enough or objective enough or substantial enough. But if you don't disclose it and you hide and still act like church and state and there's this cement wall between you, that's disingenuous. To be
Yes.
clear, Enrique is trying to work this out every day with his team at Star Ledger Online. He's the editor there and he's had an extensive experience, has extensive experience in leadership and media. Enrique, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Steve, for having me. Great seeing you.
You got to stay with us. We'll be right back.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Welcome back to Lessons in Leadership, Steve Adubato, with my extraordinary colleague, Mary Gamba. That's because we had an argument yesterday, and I trying to make up. I always get afraid when Mary's peeved. How do you know when Mary's? She does two things. Every once in a while, she raises her voice, but that's not the norm. What's the Mary move when she's really peeved?
Yep, completely quiet.
Are you quiet now, or are you going to talk to me?
I'm going to talk to you. I've said a million times, and I know you don't buy it. Nobody really thinks it's true, but the second any argument, whether it's with you, my husband, anybody in my world, it just goes back to zero because it ends up harboring too much negative energy in myself.
With some of us, it stays longer. But no, I said some of us, Mary, not
Yeah. Oh,
you.
some of us. I thought you said some of it, meaning with me. I'm like,
No,
no.
no,
I
no.
I'm like a dog. I try to be just in the moment rather than
Mary,
thinking ahead and behind.
I am not going to work out our issues in public. We're going to therapy for professional couples. All right. I'll tell you who could have used some therapy. Watch this transition. I've been reading this book, Original Sin. This is a book by Jake Tapper over at CNN and Alex Thompson. Subtitle: President Biden's Decline, Its Cover-Up, and the Disastrous Choice to Run Again. All right. So Jake Tapper, a leader in media. Yeah, listen, I like Jake. He's a friend. He's a colleague. I'm a fan. But I got to tell you, someone says, "What's this have to do with leadership?" I'm going to read the back cover to this. Original Sin. What the world saw at Joe Biden's one and only 2024 debate was not an anomaly. It was not a cold. It was not someone who was under prepared, over prepared. It was not someone who was just a little tired. It was the natural result of an 81 at the time. It would have been 86 on the back end of his second term if he had won, if he had ran and won. 81-year-old man, diminished capabilities. Biden and his family protected him. He goes on and on. Okay, what does that have to do with leadership? Everything. Mary and I talk all the time about the need to have difficult, painful, hard conversations. Mary, when I say confront, I often say confront. Healthy confrontation means to deal with it directly, fair?
Correct.
The fact that Jake Tapper has written a book that basically says, "Oh my God, I can't believe they covered it up. There was nothing to cover up." This isn't political. We saw it. It's not about Donald Trump, by the way. That's another leadership issue, a whole bunch of them, which is largely tell me what I want and need to hear, and I'll be fine. That's a different subject. How the heck could the people around the leader of the free world, the president of the United States, they know what they know. We see what we see. But no one confronts Joe Biden, including Jill Biden, including Hunter Biden, including all the political leaders around him, and said, "Mr. President, you're going to be 82 if elected, 86 on the back end. You're struggling on a whole range of issues. You're having a hard time communicating publicly. You're falling. Your balance is off, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You have all these cue cards in fundraisers. He was using a teleprompter. He has cue cards for everything. Long-winded way of getting to this. When should a leader be told, Mary, and why aren't they told, that it's time? I'm sure it'll happen for me and everyone else who gets to a certain point. Time to move on.
It is so hard to, and again, part of me always wondered, are people telling him and is there somebody in his orbit that's really protecting him? And is there one person that's saying, nope, he's good, he's got this? I don't buy the fact that no one raised their hand and said, whoa, time out here, something's just not right. Because it's also embarrassing to the legacy of a human being to let them go out there and stumble, to trip, to, I mean, every meme that's out there right now. And it's very unfortunate because that's what people are going to remember. So to answer your question more directly, it is very hard, but it is necessary to tell people the things that they need to hear, even if they don't want to, or also really resist what they're hearing.
So forget about your politics. Forget about who you like, don't like, you're Democrat, Republican, you like Trump, Biden, Harris. I couldn't care less. We couldn't care less. Because this is a leadership question, at least in my view, for everyone who is in a important, sensitive position in any organization who gets to a certain point for a variety of reasons. And age, by the way, there are some people who are 82 years of age who are incredibly sharp from a cognitive point of view, who physically don't have the same challenges. So it's not just age. It's the ability to do the job and whatever that job is. And when someone, Mary, says who is protecting, you know, they may have been protecting the president. And my argument is you're actually not protecting that person. Listen, our family had to deal with this issue with my dad, who was an incredible leader, a strong, confident leader who built large organization, community-based organization in New York, started the first charter school in the state of New Jersey. Great leader, great communicator. But he got to a certain point where he was not able to do what he needed to do on behalf of the people he was serving. And he believed he could. He did not want to hear it from those of us around him. He was peeved, angry. But who are you protecting when you don't have those conversations? Go ahead, Mary.
Well, I know that Elvin's saying that we need to say goodbye, but you are absolutely...
I don't see it in the chat, really.
Oh, he was just putting it up a second ago. So, but we're good. We're good. So just to answer that question again, going back to, it is so critical that even if in your situation, as you said, you had to have that challenging conversation, but you do need to reiterate it. You need to explain why. And more specifically, you need to give very specific examples of, just so you know, here is why I'm saying that you need to, you know, pass that baton.
Got it. We'll pick up this conversation in another program. Lessons in Leadership, Steve and Mary. See you next time.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Bucino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
How long you been waiting?
About a half hour.
Brutal. This keeps up, I'm gonna miss my pickleball game.
I've been waiting 8 years for a kidney. What can you do?
Over 100,000 people in the U.S. are waiting for a life-saving transplant, but you can do your part in an instant. Register as an organ donor today at njsn.org.